WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Two years in prison. That's what former 14th Ward Alderman Ed Burke was sentenced to on several corruption charges. He'll serve 2 years in prison and pay $2 million in fines. But the former city councilman's crimes could have landed him almost a decade in prison. So why didn't they? To hear a rundown of what prosecutors are seeking and how the community reacted, I sat down with Mariah Wolfel and Tessa Weinberg, WBEZ's city government and politics reporters.
It was bustling. Many, many people, many reporters there to witness history, really, of seeing Chicago's longest serving alderman be sentenced to federal prison. It was bustling. It was also somber. Burke's family sat behind him in the first row of the courtroom. There were reporters seated in the jury seats. That's where I was kind of looking out onto what the scene was for the jury who sat through weeks of trial. And then it was hours long. The defense called a couple of witnesses to, there were some sticking points over how to value the dollar amount of Burke's crimes. What is this bribe that he was convicted of worth? How much was he going to get in his attempted extortion charge?
I see.
And those dollar amounts go into what the level of sentencing is for him. And so it was debate and then, speeches from Burke and the judge.
Well, federal sentencing guidelines say that crimes like Burke's could land someone in prison for 6 to 8 years. Now, prosecutors were pushing for 10 in his case. He got 2, as I mentioned. What was the reaction from Burke himself and from the family?
Well, Burke held a straight face basically all day. There wasn't much reaction out of Burke. His wife, retired Chief Illinois Supreme Court Justice Ann Burke, kind of put her head in her hands, appeared to be crying when the sentence was read. It's unclear if those were tears of relief or tears of sadness. Mm-hmm. 2 years is 2 years away from your family. He's 80 years old. They're in the, kind of end stages of their lives. And Ann Burke wrote a really moving letter to the judge talking about how when God calls us home, I really want to be with my husband.
I see.
My partner of 6 decades. But not much reaction from Burke until after the judge left the courtroom. The dust started to settle and he started hugging, shaking hands and smiling with the supporters who were behind him. And so I think maybe when you're facing a decade in prison, you're going to feel some relief when it's 2 years.
When you hear 2.
Yeah.
And what about community reaction?
I think that it's mixed. I think there are some people who say this does show that, you're gonna serve time. I think if Burke got, supervised release or supervised probation or something like that, or home confinement, we'd be having a very different conversation right now. But I still think 2 years is a drop in the bucket for some people looking at what prosecutors were asking for. For some, it maybe seems like a slap on the wrist that and particularly for some who believe that the 2 years of worth of crimes that Burke was convicted of are more representative of decades of corruption. That's, the reputation and the belief that some people hold. The judge specifically said, I can't let that influence my decision. I have 2 years of crimes to look at, and I can't sit here and say that this is representative of
everything.
For some people who believe that Burke's been doing it for decades, 2 years seems like a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, Well, it's been less than 24 hours since his sentencing, Tessa. What have you been hearing from the city about the decision?
Yeah, that was something where, like Mariah said, reactions have definitely been mixed. Mayor Johnson was not commenting on the punishment that was served yesterday. He simply, you know, referred to his previous statement when the verdict had come down. But one mayor who did, you know, quickly have words to say was former Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who, you know, she clashed with Burke during her tenure as mayor. She, you know, was kind of, you know, sailed to office in part as campaigning on this reformer in the wake of the FBI raid on Burke's offices. And she, you know, said that Burke should be grateful that his sentence isn't longer, that it certainly could have been justifiably so. And she, you know, said that she hopes the sentence will send a strong message to elected officials that corruption and graft on the backs of Chicagoans comes with consequences, even for those who may seem omnipotent.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Mariah, the federal judge overseeing the sentencing had received letters from the community. One Burke supporter had said, quote, "Burke was a priest without the collar," end quote. I mean, how much do you think that influenced the decision?
Well, and his defense team repeated that to the judge in their comments yesterday, and I think this had a huge influence on the judge's decision. She spent significant amount of time at yesterday's court hearing talking about how she has never seen letters of support like this in her years as a federal judge. And that she was really taken aback, not by, you know, public officials or former public officials who wrote on behalf of Burke, which were many, you know, former police superintendents, but and police officers, one sitting Chicago alderperson. She said she kind of put those letters aside and was more so moved by letters from everyday people who wrote about just altruistic acts of kindness from Burke, which was really seems to be part of his identity and personality. You know, Burke did want to become a priest early in his career, decided to become a police officer in his father's footsteps instead. But seems that, you know, acts of kindness, and you can debate why, you know, what influences or what motivates those acts of kindness. I think the prosecutor certainly tried to argue that, you know, he exchanges favors for those acts of kindness.
Yeah.
But the judge said she was very moved by things like Burke sitting on the bedside of someone who was dying, or seeing on the news that a family couldn't pay for a funeral for their slain child, and so he would find an aide to go pay for the funeral.
Right.
And many of those people wrote in, and she said that she was facing the challenge of having to reconcile really these 2 years of crimes that were before her with, you know, letters detailing 50+ years
before,
you know, acts of kindness and charitable giving. And prosecutors, of course, said that shouldn't be a get out of jail free card.
Right.
But that didn't seem to resonate with the judge as much.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Tessa, you spoke with UIC professor Dick Simpson about the Burke sentencing. This is what he had to say about the former alderman's now tarnished legacy.
Burke is now over 80 years old, so this will be a trying experience for him. And this conviction completely erases his role as a major force in Chicago history in the way he would like to have had it remembered.
Do you think that this trial, the conviction, and the sentencing, does any of that send a message to other politicians about what happens when you betray public trust?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, somewhat up for debate. I think, you know, Dick Simpson, who served with Burke and in city council in the 1970s, you know, he noted Burke's age and said, you know, 2 years is not nothing for someone, especially when you're 80 years old. And that, you know, but it will really remains to be seen, you know, will we see a reduction in corruption cases, you know, happening, getting caught, you know, getting tried like this?
Mm-hmm.
And something that, you know, Better Government Association President David Greising, he was very critical, saying the sentence is light and that it does not go far enough. And he was pushing for the city council to, in the wake of this, to pass some of these long stalled ethics reforms to show that they won't tolerate this going forward, that they're a different body than, you know, the one that shaped Ed Burke and that Ed Burke ruled over. So I think we'll have to see if, you know, the corruption that's long been entrenched in City Hall, if, you know, this is maybe a turn of the page and a new leaf, or it's just, you know, one of many to come.
Well, before we touch on another quick story, Mariah, when will Burke have to go to prison?
He has been given a date of September 23rd. So about 30 days from his sentencing yesterday, and he'll just—that's his surrender date. He'll have to turn himself in. It hasn't been determined where he will be imprisoned yet. And during that time, during that 30 days, he will be able to stay either at his house in Chicago or at his house on a lake in Wisconsin. And so he'll be able to travel then.
Let's shift gears to other city politics news. The Garfield Park Library is playing a key part of the city's effort to expand mental health services. What's going on here, Tessa?
Yeah, so this is part of Mayor Johnson's commitment and expansion to city-run, public-funded mental health services. Mm-hmm. And he had recently announced that the city would be reopening the shuttered Roseland Clinic and also be expanding the places where they offer mental health care. And so the Legler Library is one of those places. The city now has a counselor there once a week who is just available for folks to, if you walk in, need someone to talk to, maybe need referral for services, they're there. They have a dedicated presence every single week.
And you spoke to the counselor.
His name is Jordan Henderson. He's a counselor with Chicago's Department of Public Health. He's there every Tuesday. He could be found in the study room or browsing the shelves. And he said, you know, so far when I had visited last week, he'd been working there already for 3 weeks and that it was a surprise to many people that they didn't expect to maybe see a therapist, a counselor when they walked into the library.
Yeah.
But, you know, that he's there for if people need to vent, if they need connections to resources, or even if they just have other needs, you know, like, you know, a place to get food or a place to stay, that he's there to kind of help connect them with those needs so that they can improve their mental health.
Seems convenient. I mean, Mariah, we know the Legler branch also has one of the busiest sites for distributing Narcan, right? And overdose reversal spray. What's the connection there?
Well, I think it's definitely one of the factors that the city considered when deciding where to expand mental health services at a library. The Legler branch is in West Garfield Park, which is an area of the city that's been disinvested and under-resourced for decades. And so it's no surprise that there's a high need for Narcan in that area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously mental health, addiction resources, all the holistic ways to combat addiction as well. The city made Narcan available and free at all Chicago public libraries in 2022. There's 80 plus libraries.
Right.
And so I'm sure that is a helpful statistic for them to determine where they can place some of these mental health providers as we go forward as well.
Right. And you mentioned, Tessa, Johnson wants to reopen those past shuttered clinics. Do we have a timeline for that?
Yeah. So, you know, initially that they've committed to reopening the shuttered Roseland Clinic. That one they say they're going to do by the end of the year. They're also going to be expanding mental health services at the city's Pilsen Clinic. And so they're hoping to do those by the end of the year. And then, you know, I would imagine as we go into this upcoming budget season, we might see some dollars and resources dedicated to, you know, even more expansions down the line.
Mm-hmm. Tessa Weinberg and Mariah Wolf will cover city government and politics for us here at WBEZ. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Nadia Hernandez, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Micah Yasin. Reset brings you the latest you need to know in news and culture. You can check out a full archive of our conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening. We'll talk again tomorrow.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.